election subversion, stealing of classified documents, hush money, fraud. Former President Donald Trump's legal troubles are not only costing him precious time on the campaign trail, but could cost him his wealth as well. I'm Skynell Hughes, and on this episode of 360 View, we're going to look at the 91 felony cases across two state courts and two different federal districts against Donald Trump, and if they are politically motivated in an attempt to derail the former president's presidential bid, or are they solid cases which could land the former president bankrupt or even worse, in jail? Let's get started. Former President Donald Trump is facing 91 indictments between four criminal cases. But the cases are not running smoothly, and some might even believe beginning to fall apart. Now, first, the verdict in Trump's New York civil business fraud trial was delayed as the judge, Arthur Erdogan, waited to find the details about Alan Weisenberg, the Trump Organization's former CFO plea deal, and if he actually lied under oath. Now, Attorney General Letitia James seeks to fine Trump more than $370 million over claims he misrepresented the value of the company's assets to ensure more favorable business loans and insurance premiums. Meanwhile, the slated March 4th start date of Trump's election interference trial in Washington, D.C., no longer appears on the federal district court's public calendar. U.S. District Judge Tanya Chikanza's oversight of the case is on hold as Trump is appealing her ruling against his presidential immunity claims. And then third, the scandal surrounding an affair between Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis and her special prosecutor Nathan Wade have put her place in the case also under investigation. Now, Wade was paid $650,000 of taxpayer money to prosecute the Trump case, even though he was not qualified for such a high-profile case. Plus, he used the money he earned to take Fannie Willis on an extravagant vacation, so much so that Representative Jim Jordan is even subpoenaing Willis for records of her use of federal grant money. Now, a recent whistleblower has actually alleged she misused funds and was fired by Willis for bringing concerns to her in 2021 that a Willis aide planned to use a portion of a $488,000 federal grant for frivolous expenses. Now, these expenses, which included Wade billing the Fulton County DA's office $4,000 for 2 8-hour meetings with White House officials. Now, all of these details, plus a Manhattan federal jury ordering Mr. Trump to pay E. Jean Carroll $83.3 million in damages after a civil jury found last year that Trump had sexually abused and defamed her when she accused him of wrongdoing. But her response just a few days later was this.
You've talked about using some of Trump's money that you're about to get to help shore up women's rights. Do you know what that might be, what that might look like?
Yes, or, Rachel. Yes.
Tell me.
I had such great ideas for all the good I'm going to do with this money. First thing, Rachel, you and I are going to go shopping. We're going to get completely new wardrobes, new shoes, motorcycle for Crowley, new fishing rod for Robbie. Rachel, what do you want? Penthouse? It's yours,
nothing.
Rachel. Penthouse and France? You want France? You want to go fishing
nope.
in France? No? Oh, all right. All right. Okay.
That's a joke.
All right. Okay.
That's a joke.
Although, if me fishing in France could do something for women's rights, I would take the hit. You know, I would obviously take one for the team.
All right, let me.
as if you need persuasion in that regard.
Did the lawyer say one more time, that's a joke? Okay, I've got to bring in our panel for this. We have former Democratic Congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson, Angie Wong, host of the Final Countdown on Sputnik Radio, and Angela McArdle, chair of the Libertarian Party Committee. I want to get to all of it, but I could not miss that clip right there. And I want to start with you on this one, Angie. A shopping spree? This, on top of saying in a prior interview with Anderson Cooper that most people think of the word rape as sexy. While the juries are continuing to rule in her favor, doesn't her behavior actually strengthen the argument that in all of this, that this is political in the court of public opinion?
Well, absolutely. She should not be on air bragging about how she's going to spend the millions of dollars that she just won that's going into appeals. I mean, this, you can tell that this is all just for playing up to her base, which is the left, who loves the fact that she, you know, just won $83 million. And it's you know, it's gross and it's just brass for her to go on air to discuss buying shoes and clothing with this money and then buying penthouses. This is going to look very poorly for when she goes into appeals court, because then it shows that her intent was really just to really bash Trump. And that's what this is about.
And that's where a lot of these cases are motivated. Angela, on to Judge Engeron. He basically ruled 11 weeks ago that Donald Trump was guilty of committing fraud in New York before it even started. How can this be considered, considering the banks were paid back in full with interest? The banks are not even the ones that are bringing the case forward. Rather, it's the city of New York who would actually benefit from receiving the $370 million from the Trump organization and Donald Trump.
I think it's a giant circus. And what this does is, you know, in addition to eroding the general public's faith in the in the electoral process, I think that it completely erodes the general public's faith in the judicial branch as well. And, you know, that's kind of where we're at here. I don't think that anybody's going to take anything that happens in court seriously going forward. How could you?
Well, but then I'm going to bring in Donald Trump's number one fan, and I say that kind of sarcastically because we have Alan Grayson on this, and I want to get your opinion on this, because I know you probably actually think that all of these cases are doing a lot of damage to Trump and are justified. But I want to look at the judge in this case, because Judge Engeron has a long history of supporting Democrats, a member of the American Civil Liberties Union, longtime liberal organization. If Trump is indeed as guilty as Democrats are saying, then wouldn't it have been better to try this in a more politically impartial courtroom, at least from the optics point?
No. Every single ruling in that case has been legally justified. I follow these things pretty closely, and I will tell you that there is a line, and the line is crossed sometimes by some judges, and that has not been crossed so far in any of these cases that I can see. They are making judgments on the merits. And by the way, what you're seeing in response is rampant whataboutism. What about the judge? What about the accuser? What about this? What about that? Why can't we just focus on whether Donald Trump is guilty or not, whether he's liable or not? That would really be a welcome change from what I've been hearing from Trump and from Trump's supporters. It doesn't really matter what happens to the money. What matters is that he falsely accused somebody, and as a result of that, he was held accountable. What are we going to hear when the case goes to trial about why Trump had classified documents next to his toilet paper? Are we going to hear all about what brand of toilet paper he buys? Can't we just focus on what's important and what really matters? Is Trump guilty or not?
Okay, so Angie, simple answer to that. Why can't we just focus on whether Trump is guilty or not? Is that what the focus is in all of this?
No, because he would never get a fair trial in New York or Washington, right? It's just, it's funny because you put this very same case in any other jurisdiction and you might have a very different outcome. Remember, the original, he was originally supposed to pay $5 million. How did that multiply to $83 million? And that could only happen in a New York court.
Right, on that side. But Angela, how does this look from a libertarian point? Because one thing libertarians are known for is they do not like the government involved in anybody, whether it's a politician on the left or the right. How are they viewing all of the judicial proceedings that are going against Donald Trump?
It's politically motivated, and our judicial branch has been completely captured by political activists. It's something that the left is very good at. Conservatives are extremely behind the ball. You know, so are libertarians, with there being less of us. But the left has completely captured academia, and where do attorneys come from? You know, colleges, universities, academia. They're completely captured. It's all politically motivated. It really calls into question the integrity of other court proceedings as well. I hope that the average person starts to wonder and suspect and become more suspicious of other court proceedings and hearings that they think maybe that's not so fair either. Alex Jones is one of the first things that comes to mind. Like him or not, Donald Trump is a political canary in a coal mine right now.
So here's my question to you, Alan. In all these cases, every single time a new case comes against Donald Trump, why do you feel like he continues to rise in the poll from it? If you don't think that necessarily it's about the case itself, it's not, you know, whether he's guilty or not, he keeps continuing to rise in the polls with each accusation that comes against him.
I think he's actually been flat in the polls. He rose against Ron DeSantis, and that's because he was running against the stiff. In fact, that's been true of the Republicans who ran against Trump in general. You can't have a personality cult like DeSantis tried to do without a personality. That's the result of the Republican primary that you're seeing. As the general election, it's been pretty flat for a very long time, and it is essentially likely to be a referendum on Trump. That's the way he always wants it to be, and that's what we're going to see the result of that, good or bad.
A referendum on Trump, Angie. Trump's not in office. Usually you see the referendums on the guy who's currently sitting in the office. Why do you agree that this is actually more about a referendum on Trump than Biden?
Well, this is certainly the same playbook from 2020, which is I'm not Trump. That's the only thing Joe Biden can run on, is that look how awful Trump is, but I'm not as awful, so vote for me instead. You know what? It did work in 2020, and they're doing exactly the same playbook. It's not a referendum on Trump necessarily, but about the cult of Trump. And they're building that as a Hollywood script. We're all falling for it again. I just hope that, you know, people see right through their tactics.
Okay, so Angela, you brought up the idea, the concept that this is actually weakening people's trust, possibly in the judicial system, political, that this is actually something that, and this is said to Angela, that this is actually, you know, weakening people's trust they have in the justice system. How do you see that this plays out? I mean, we obviously have various politicians right now that are on trials for different scandals around the country. But I look at Senator Bob Menendez, what just came down with him. There's other things that are happening. Do you think that you can ever have a fair trial for a politician moving forward?
I don't think so. I think the implications are really far-reaching. I think you're going to see potentially low voter turnout, more people voting third party because they're just fatigued by the whole thing. No trust in the political process, no trust in the judicial process either. You might have people starting to look more towards arbitration, just becoming less emotionally invested in the entire affair. And certainly wondering and digging into whether or not these laws are equally applied to people on both sides of the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. Let's say, for example, that Donald Trump committed every single thing he was accused of, all 91 counts. You just can't convince me, unless maybe you could put the evidence in front of me, but otherwise you couldn't convince me that Joe Biden and his ilk and, you know, many of the people who came before him didn't commit all the same acts. And the courts and political the political machine, they just turn their heads and look the other way, because the political class doesn't have to follow the same rules that we do. But Donald Trump isn't one of the political elites, right? He's an outsider, so they're going to throw the book at him. That's what it seems like to me, and I hope that that's what it looks like to the average American.
Do you agree with that, Congressman, that the political, that there is a being a part of a former member, or maybe you still are of the political class, do you see that from the Democrat standpoint, that there is a treatment different from the common person and the politician?
If anything, it's worse. But in Donald Trump's case, it's not worse. It's simply accurate. Any human being who took classified documents and stuck them next to the toilet is going to get indicted. That's what's going to happen, whether you're high, low, or in the middle.
Okay.
I mean, look what happened recently when the IRS found out that somebody had leaked Donald Trump's tax returns. They sentenced him to 4 years in prison. That's the way it goes. And that's true of all of Trump's cases. None of these cases are cases where he's being singled out, mistreated. He's simply a grievance politician. He wants to whine. Okay. That's the way he's always been, going back 40 years in New York. He's still doing it. It's worked pretty well for him so far, not so much in the justice system.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break right now, because we're going to get back to those secret documents that were besides the toilet, because there's a little bit of details I got to ask you about, Alan. Because when we come back, I'm going to dive into the cases in Georgia, which went from looking like cases against Trump for election interference, but newly released records show several meetings between the attorney general prosecuting the case's lover and the White House during the exact time the cases were being filed. Is it just a coincidence? We'll discuss. Welcome back. Classic love story. Boy meets girl. Girl falls in love with boy. Girl hires boy. Girl files case against former president. Boy meets with current president's staff. Just a coincidence, I bet. Story for the romance novels and for Disney. But it's actually not so simple. And while we could discuss all of the scandalous details of the Georgia Attorney General's affair with her staff member, which resulted in a divorce, the bigger question is, does all of the scandalous side details have anything to do with the actual case being brought against Donald Trump in Georgia, which, more than any other case, attempts to prove Trump's actions and words were an assault on democracy following his loss in the 2020 election. So let's continue our discussion with our panel. We have former Democratic Congressman from Florida, Alan Grayson, Angie Wong, host of The Final Countdown on Sputnik Radio, and Angela McArdle, chair of the Libertarian Party Committee. Thank you so much for this. You know, Angie, you've been a big one on this one. Do you think Fannie Willis and her personal romance has anything to do with the case against Trump?
Well, absolutely, because it's clearly a conflict of interest. She hired her alleged lover. Oh, sorry, no longer alleged. She's proven to be the special prosecutor. And here's the problem with all this. He's not a very good black ops guy. He's actually wrote down in his legal billings that he's met with the White House counsel. He's met with the J6 committee in Congress. And, you know, there seems to be something there. And now, you know, there's when there's even an air or an appearance of conflict of interest, you have to recuse yourself. We're now also seeing that the judge might have some problems as well. He used to work, Judge Scott McAfee, who is part of the, who's presiding over the RICO case. He used to work for Fannie Willis back between 2015 to 2018. How come that didn't come out? I mean, this is like all in the family.
Well, it is the South. It is Georgia. It's like it might be the rumor. But let me ask about this to you, Alan. Does Fannie, does her romance, her personal affairs, does that actually hurt the case in the eyes of Democrats?
If the question is it appropriate or inappropriate for the President of the United States to call the chief vote counter in a contested states and ask him, in a recording that we will all hear over and over again, can you get me another 11,000 votes? That's what the case is all about. Now, if you're asking me, would Willis have brought the case except for her relationship with this other attorney, I think the answer is yes, but it doesn't matter. What matters is that by reasonable, objective standards, Trump is guilty of election interference. And we all know it. I mean, it unfolded in front of our eyes. So that I'm not going to say that two wrongs make a right. I'm not going to defend Willis. I'm not going to defend the judge presiding over the case. I'm not going to do that. What I'm telling you is that unless two wrongs make a right, Donald Trump is guilty.
So, Angela, racketeering, which is what is being charged, can be a very broad. And if Trump is not guilty, why did three of his co-defendants, do you think, strike plea deals with the Georgia Attorney General?
I think that people feel terrorized by the judicial system right now, and they're genuinely frightened, and they're doing anything and everything they can to escape the whole thing with their lives intact. You see innocent defendants get put through the meat grinder of, you know, criminal courts all the time and make plea bargains, and their attorneys push them to take plea bargains because it's so risky. I think that, you know, I don't know for sure whether or not they're innocent or guilty, but I do know for a fact that a lot of innocent people take plea deals because they're just trying to escape with their lives intact.
And their money can also be expensive.
Yes.
Even being hauled in front of Congress for it could be a couple $100,000 in attorney bills. Now, we're going to get to the topic, Alan, that you've been wanting to talk about, those documents besides the potty Donald Trump was using when he was freshening his nose. What about the removal of those documents from the White House, which has accrued 37 felonies? I'm trying to figure out how President Trump could do this without anyone knowing. Like, how did he get them from the White House to his bathroom in Mar-a-Lago without Secret Service, FBI, the butler asking questions?
They did. I don't agree with the premise of the question. What happened was that there are other people who helped him. I can't really picture Trump carrying boxes around. He probably hasn't done that any time in his entire life. And what happened is that an investigation was launched once it became clear initially to the archives and then to DOJ that he had kept documents. And over time, they interviewed all these people and looked at the security cameras and they raided Mar-a-Lago. So I don't think you could say that nobody knew about this. The justice system grinds slowly, but it grinds fine, as Sun Tzu said.
But once again, Angie, somebody had to physically carry those boxes. I know if I'm carrying a box out of the White House that has top secret on it, I'm probably not going to carry that box out regardless of who commanded me to carry it out. That's what's getting me on this. How come you did not find this out until after President Trump basically was announcing his reelection bid or his bid for the president? Why did that come out after? Is that not just kind of taint the whole situation?
Well, look, an exiting president always takes everything with him, his files, whatnot, you know, in preparation for the presidential library. This is not uncommon for them to take documents from the White House. What's really frustrating is that you had Special Prosecutor Robert Hur, who just said, we're not going to press any charges on Joe Biden for doing the same thing when he was vice president, right, when he didn't have the presidential immunity within his file. So it's just two tiers of justice again. And now, you know, the public's really tired of this. President Trump could declare any document he wants to be, you know, released to the public. That's what he has the right to do as a former president.
Alan, do you agree with that?
No, that's just completely wrong. And in fact, there's a record that all the presidents when they leave office since the Archive Act was passed, which is like six presidents ago, whenever they leave office, they're instructed by their legal counsel they have to leave everything behind. So the premise is not correct. As to whether it's normal or appropriate, no, it's not. I mean, even members of Congress who leave are instructed on this law. And it, you know, honestly, let's use some common sense. Does it make sense that Donald Trump would have boxes and boxes of highly confidential material, classified documents, actually labeled classified, in his bathroom? Come on.
Well, that's what I bring to you on, Angela, when you look at this, because they did find documents in Joe Biden's garage, I think in one of his cars, in the trunks that he had as vice president. Now you've got Donald Trump had him, where they also went through, I guess, the former first lady's underwear drawer as well. How does this look to libertarians, to independents watching both of these situations? Does this just turn people away saying that it's just too much of a mess to even bother with?
It looks entirely typical. I'm not really quite sure why we feign shock and horror at politicians taking things out of their offices that they're not supposed to. I mean, this has probably been going on since the beginning of the presidency. I'm completely nonplussed. I really, you know, can't stand Joe Biden, and I'm sure that he has them, and it doesn't shock me, and I don't clutch my pearls at the thought of Joe Biden doing it either. I just think, oh, this is just what politicians do. They take documents home and stick them in their bathrooms. I mean, we got wars going on overseas. Those are the things that I'm concerned about. The whole thing is just a circus and a mockery. We're talking about Donald Trump's toilet. I'm embarrassed for Americans who are thinking about this on a daily basis.
So then, Angie, I have to ask you, if Donald Trump is elected, what do you think happens to all of these cases that go against him?
Well, I think any federal case will get knocked out because he'll just wave his wand and it goes away. The state cases are going to be a little bit more difficult. He doesn't have jurisdiction over those. So it does have to get knocked out. But it looks like the Georgia case is on its way because I can't see Fannie Willis continuing on with this. And certainly her office is entirely compromised now. So until another jurisdiction takes over, that could happen. But I don't know of any other DA who would want to take on this mess. Same thing in New York City, right? The Alvin Bragg's case. That's clearly not in the news anymore because it was one of his weakest cases anyway. I think you're going to start seeing every case slowly dissolving. And we're starting to see signs of that now. So I'm very hopeful.
Well, I definitely had the A team here. So Angie, Alan, and Angela, thank you so much for joining us with this conversation. In Venezuela, Leopoldo Lopez, an opposition leader, is serving a 14-year prison sentence on charges which a former prosecutor says was fabricated by the current government. In Taiwan, former President Chen Shui-bian was jailed for corruption charges after his party lost political power in 2008. Augusto Pinochet assumed power after he led a coup in 1973 and arrested all of his political opponents and, as well, the current president of Egypt, has been accused of orchestrating a coup which led to the arrest and sentencing to former President Mohamed Morsi, who was democratically elected. But as God commands in Matthew, you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your neighbor's eye. Following candidate Trump's comments during a 2016 presidential debate that he would have Hillary Clinton investigated and arrested if he was elected president, Democrats and Republicans alike were quick to point out even the attorney general underneath Richard Nixon resigned when he was ordered to investigate Nixon's political opponents. Former attorney general under Obama Eric Holder quickly pointed out that jailing Hillary Clinton would constitute an abuse of his power. Well, what a difference just a few years and a change of power can make in the United States, because here we are. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thanks for watching.